Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity is off today. David French of National Review is with us. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis. David, the streak of all crazies when you're here has been snapped. Are you happy or are you depressed?
I'm actually happy because the all crazies were sometimes crazy bad.
That's the way they've usually been here the last few years. But let's do the traditional format today, and we'll start with good news. This is actually courtesy of NBC News. Tony Podesta and the Podesta Group are now the subjects of a federal investigation being led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Three sources with knowledge of the matter told NBC News. The probe of Podesta and his Democratic-leaning lobbying firm grew out of Mueller's inquiry into the finances of former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort, according to the sources. As special counsel, Mueller has been tasked with investigating possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Manafort had organized a public relations campaign for a nonprofit called the European Center for a Modern Ukraine. Podesta's company was one of many firms that worked on the campaign, which promoted Ukraine's image in the West. The sources said the investigation into Podesta and his company began as more of a fact-finding mission about the ECMU and Manafort's role in the campaign, but has now morphed into a criminal inquiry into whether the firm violated the Foreign Agents Registration Act, also known as FARA. Under FARA, people who lobby on behalf of foreign governments, leaders, or political parties must file detailed disclosures about their spending and activities with the Justice Department. Willful failure to file the forms is a felony and can result in up to 5 years in prison, though such prosecutions are rare. The Podesta Group filed a FARA registration for its work with ECMU only after the payments were reported by the media, which is often the way it is with some of these people. Tony Podesta is the brother of John Podesta, chief of staff to President Clinton, obviously very high up in the Hillary Clinton campaign. So, David, I guess at the very least here, it's good news that the idea that this is a solely partisan witch hunt on the part of Bob Mueller doesn't seem to be true. And given what we heard about FBI informants and Uranium One and a massive Russian bribery scheme with the Obama administration, who knows where this investigation could go? And it appears that Bob Mueller may be willing to investigate a whole lot more than we originally thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, what I think is interesting is, or you know, maybe a little bit disappointingly predictable, is that people have looked at the story of Russian influence on American politics entirely through the prism of Donald Trump, as if Vladimir Putin, who had been completely passive in American politics his entire career, looked up, saw Trump and said, oh, a comrade, and then suddenly got involved. No. For one thing, if you go back to the Soviet Union, efforts to interfere with American politics have a very long history. I mean, it goes back decades. But more recently, Russian efforts to interfere with American politics, to take advantage of American corruption, to, for example, and gain an important role in the American uranium market, you know, in American uranium production. All this has been going on for a while. And all the Russians need are greedy people. They just need greedy, power-hungry people, and they can exploit that greed, and they can exploit that hunger for power. And guess what? Those kinds of folks are not limited and not exclusive to the Trump campaign. And so an honest look at what Russia has been doing in the United States is going to end up going well beyond the Trump campaign. I mean, that's just anything that's a remotely honest look at it is. And so, you know, some of these new reports are fascinating. From The Hill. The Hill's been doing some tremendous work in breaking some of this news. So it's fascinating to see. And I'm looking forward to having all of this uncovered because it is vitally important for our democracy that we understand what a foreign power is trying to do to influence everything from an election to our uranium production, which is a vitally important part of American national security. So it's good to see this. It's good to see diligent, what appears to be from the outside, and that's to emphasize we are talking about this from the outside. We don't have inside knowledge, but it is good to see what appears from the outside to be diligent investigative work.
David, a couple of quick follow-ups here. First of all, I'm sure folks are stunned to hear that the Russians could find anybody who was greedy or thirsty for power in American politics.
I know it's amazing to think that that some of those folks are actually out there. I thought all politicians were altruistic and virtuous to the core, but maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah. And another thing, and this has been out for a while now, I believe it was Professor Paul Kengor who found it in some of the declassified KGB files about Ted Kennedy trying to get the Russians to interfere in the Soviets at that time, 1984 presidential race, to try and deny President Reagan re-election. Of course, I don't know how far it went, but he only won 49 states. So obviously he was quite effective.
Yeah, well, you know, the Kennedy story is really remarkable, and it's of a piece with a number of stories about Ted Kennedy that show him to be, in many ways, an absolutely vile person. I mean, we've also seen some new reports, or not really new reports, but resurrecting some older reports that didn't get enough attention, that Ted Kennedy was, you know, a guy in, you know, you want to put him in the same kind of category as maybe a Harvey Weinstein. And so, you know, some of these people, some of these people that the American have been lionized by the American media and lionized in the American public. When you learn about what they were really like, the picture starts to change a bit.
David, you are a transition genius talking about putting people in the same category as Harvey Weinstein. So let's move to our bad martini now. And this comes to us courtesy from a guy over at National Review named David French, who wrote this yesterday. Over the weekend, the New York Times published an extended scoop about Bill O'Reilly. It turns out that he recently settled yet another sexual harassment case, this time for a staggering $32 million. The allegations were deeply troubling. Here's the Times. Quote, although the deal has not been previously made public, the network's parent company, 21st Century Fox, acknowledges that it was aware of the woman's complaints about Mr. O'Reilly. They included allegations of repeated harassment, a non-consensual sexual relationship, and the sending of gay pornography and other sexually explicit material to her, according to the people briefed on the matter. And then back to you, the amount was large, but the settlement wasn't unusual. O'Reilly was a serial settler of sexual harassment claims, yet Fox gave him a lucrative new contract anyway. So, and if you read deeper into the story, you know exactly who this complainant is. She was on his show a lot. So this is obviously a guy, Bill O'Reilly, who had case after case, accusation after accusation settled to the total tune of somewhere around $45 million. The Times estimates that overall Fox has shelled out about $100 million over the years to deal with complaints across the board. And obviously we're at a point now where you see Bill O'Reilly trying to reemerge and reestablish himself. And you say the right needs to slam the door on that ASAP.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, look, this is when you look at the numbers here, they're just staggering. And just as a perspective, so I'm an attorney who many years ago, I was pulled into my firm had an employment law division. And I was sometimes pulled into the bigger sexual harassment cases that our firm worked on. And there is such a thing as a nuisance settlement. So a nuisance settlement is when somebody files, say, a frivolous claim, and the cost of litigating it would be more than the potential liability or the exposure. Sometimes you give people money just to make them go away. Confidentiality agreements are signed. And so you can't really read anything into the existence of a settlement. But $32 million is not a nuisance settlement. Settlements totaling $45 million are not nuisance settlements. And I was watching today, there's an attorney who's representing him. He said, I believe, 22 clients involved in cases with Fox. And some of the settlement terms in these O'Reilly cases were interesting that they required the destruction of evidence. So not only would the people be sworn to confidentiality as a result of the deal, also things like text messages, emails, et cetera, would be destroyed. And so what this does, it allows, say, O'Reilly to basically run around saying, oh, well, you know, all of this is baseless, all this is baseless, secure in the knowledge that evidence has been annihilated and, you know, old text messages or emails or whatever won't come back and bite him. None of this is the behavior of a guy who is completely innocent and but just because he's famous, he's got a target on his back and people come after him with meritless claims. I mean, the point I made in the article was there are a lot of famous conservatives that people on the left hate. You know, Mike Pence, for example, is a very famous conservative that people on the left despise. Yet the main criticism of him is that he's too careful to avoid sexual harassment. cases. And so where are all the complaints against Mitt Romney? Where are all the complaints? I mean, you can go down the line of conservative figures that people on the left dislike. It's just simply not true that it's a cost of doing business that you get faced with an avalanche of meritless sexual harassment claims that you have to settle for $45 million collectively. So at this point, you know, there's a lot of folks on the right who are very happy to call out Hollywood and are right to call out Hollywood for its culture of corruption and are right to call on Hollywood to banish Harvey Weinstein. And Hollywood seems to be doing that. I mean, he's been kicked out of the Academy. He's off his out of his company. He's, you know, he's persona non grata. And Bill O'Reilly still gets key guests to come onto his show. Sean Hannity had him on not long ago. You know, there are others, very, very, very prominent conservatives who are either going on his show or are being hosted on their own shows. And that just needs to stop. We don't need to hear his voice in the public square right now. This is a person, as I said, he's a serial settler of claims. And some of these claims are very, very serious. I mean, as you read in there, there was a phrase, non-consensual sexual relationship. That's a very serious allegation. One settled for a gigantic sum of money. So I think it's time for him to go away. And if he won't go away on his own, it's time for conservatives to stop listening to him.
Wow. Megyn Kelly, who of course is now with NBC but was with Fox for many years, had quite a lot to say about that this morning during her hour, the third hour of the Today Show. You can find that online. She talks about how she spoke out against O'Reilly right around Election Day of last year when a lot of things around Roger Ailes were going down and being revealed. And she also named some other names of people behind the scenes at Fox News who she believes aided and abetted that sort of behavior.
And also, you know, one of the things, and this is something, you know, this is really uncomfortable for a lot of conservatives to hear because they really, really like Fox News. But Fox had this culture where if somebody came and complained or if a complaint went public, there would be people within Fox who essentially, you know, essentially their job was character assassination. It was to try to destroy people who'd come forward. That is extraordinarily toxic. And again, what does this remind you of? It reminds you of some of the allegations around Harvey Weinstein. So, you know, the culture of greed and exploitation is not confined to one side of the political aisle. People on both sides of the political aisle are human beings, and there are human beings on both sides of the political aisle who are capable of doing very bad things. And we've got to be able to face that on our own side, so to speak, with the same vigor that we face it on the other side. I just fear that we just have too many people who say, I'm going to focus on what the other guy's doing, and I'm just going to kind of either bury my head in the sand about my own team or just disbelieve. I'm just not going to believe it. I refuse to believe it. And I get a lot of that on social media. And it's just not right. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. Say people who know nothing about this area of the law, who know nothing about the nature of settlements, and who would never cut the same slack to people on the other side.
Yeah, deciding where you stand based on what you want to be true rather than what the facts would suggest. David, some other cable networks would think, well, what a horrible, horrible day for Fox News. But when you consider the competition, you got MSNBC last week who says that John Kelly is a racist because he grew up in Boston. And now CNN has come up with its version of differentiating itself from the competition as well. Here is CNN's new promotional ad. And all you need to know about the video is it's just an apple with a white background. Here you go.
This is an apple. Some people might try to tell you that it's a banana. They might scream banana, banana, banana over and over and over again. They might put banana in all caps. You might even start to believe that this is a banana. But it's not. This is an apple.
And then it says, facts first, CNN. So, David, obviously with the all caps, they're talking about Trump and their fight over the truth and so forth and fake news and denouncing fake news and the idea that they're somehow biased or not telling the truth and that sort of thing. It's fun to watch the reaction, though, on conservative Twitter. Ben Shapiro not only put that up, but right next to it, he has a CNN story saying, quote, my body is awesome, trans man expecting first child. So there's a lot of people looking at that. There's also, of course, selective stories that CNN won't really cover. Look at the Menendez trial on corruption. Look at the Uranium One story. Look at some other things out there right now. And obviously, there's plenty to criticize the Trump administration on, but it's pretty obvious where their bent is there as well. So what do you make of the Apple / banana campaign?
Well, first, Ben Shapiro is a national treasure. His tweet was hilarious. And one of the obvious retorts here is, we have a media that, particularly when it comes to some of these incredibly hot button social issues like gender identity, will do its own version of what it accuses the other side of doing and what it accuses Trump of doing, of, in essence, all caps, defying reality with all caps until people believe it. I'm no apologist for the Trump tactic of calling everything that's negative against him fake news. Unfortunately, a lot of the news that's negative about him is actual real news. However, CNN needs to have a little humility here. I mean, let's not forget that they had some prominent resignations recently because they ran a major story about Trump that didn't meet its editorial standards. Humility, unfortunately, is in short supply in our culture and our society. But that's one of the first things I thought when I saw that is, here's a better way of saying it. We do our best. We do our best. When we don't meet the standards we strive to uphold, then we take action. And that's all you can ask of a news organization. But to sit here and proclaim that you're the bold truth tellers, when you've had so many instances in the recent past of either kowtowing to political correctness or just flat out making mistakes, you're just setting yourself up. You're setting yourself up as a target. And that's what I, when I saw that, the Apple banana, I just thought two things. Number one, and Ben beat me to it, they have a selective view of the truth here. And then number two, where's the humility? Because guys, you've messed up. You messed up a number of times, and a credible, humble organization owns up to that rather than sits there and continues to cast themselves completely as the fearless truth tellers.
So what we've learned today, David, is that in politics, and I guess we can extend that to the media, there are greedy people and there are power-hungry people, not a lot of humble people. Do we have our check marks in order here?
Yeah, you just distilled down the whole podcast of like 4 seconds.
People are going to be shocked. They had no idea before they clicked on this one that's what happens here in Washington and in much of the media. David, always great to have you with us, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks much. I appreciate it.
David French of National Review and for Jim Garrity today. We'll be back together tomorrow. Please tune in then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.